I did want to bring into our conversation, we have a candidate who is running for House District 25. For those of you who listen to grassroots radio, you will understand and realize that this gentleman, who was in my 2012 graduating class of leadership program of the Rockies, he goes by the name of John Kaiser, and he's going to be challenging Sherry Giroux. And for those of you that don't remember, Sherry Giroux is the gal that got into that, oh, I don't know, she was the one that had some expletives to say at Joe Neville, who is a lobbyist for Rocky Mountain gun owners. Her Principles of Liberty scores are just slightly better than the Democrats, and I'm going to pull them up right now, and I'll tell you exactly where she comes in. And let's see, where did she end up? Where did she end up? Oh, there she is. Number 28th. Number 28th out of 30. Wait. Number 28th out of 28. She was at the bottom of the barrel for Republicans. She scored less than 5 points higher than the best Democrat. You think that's somebody screaming out to be primaried? Yeah, I do. John, welcome to Grassroots Radio.
Thanks a lot, Ken. Really appreciate you having me. And Senator Marble, glad to be here with you as well.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad you could make it. It's a pleasure to have you here.
So, John, I got to ask you. You're running against a Democrat in the primaries, one Sherry Giroux.
Okay.
And so, you know, and I know that you have a strong foundation because you were in Principles of Liberty and you were in my class, which was arguably the best class ever.
That's a fact.
Yeah, that is a fact. And so tell me, what is basically going to be, first of all, what made you decide to throw down?
Well, I guess, first of all, Ken, that's only partially right. I guess I would say that right now I'm not challenging Representative Giroux. She hasn't filed. You know, and so I don't know what her intentions are. But I know that she can't start raising money until she does file for her what would be her fourth and final term before she'd be termed out in the House. So, you know, right now I'm running the best campaign that we can, going out talking to the voters in the district. And, you know, we're just laser focused on our campaign right now, trying to get ramped up as quickly as we can because, you know, we know that there's a lot of people right now that are probably watching my campaign and they're going to see how viable we are here in the first couple months that we're out. So. Yeah, we're trying to get off the ground quick.
All right. Well, you're running against Sherry Stump the Chump Giroux, and those are her words, not mine. Those are her words. She called herself Stump the Chump Giroux, so, you know, I can only go off of what she says. But anyway, let's talk about your platform. Give me your three basic issues that you would consider your platform.
Yeah, I think that it's pretty clear when I get out and talk to voters that we need somebody that's representing the voters in House District 25, somebody who has strong constitutional conservative principles, somebody who's fiscally conservative, and somebody who really does deeply care about educating our kids. Ken, you know that you probably saw on Sunday at the Freedom Festival, my daughter, Eleanor, she was just born here recently, a couple months ago. You know, she's been a huge blessing for my wife, Emma, and I, and we've got skin in the game now on the education side. And so, you know, there's this huge tax increase that we're talking about, you know, voting for, you know, this vote that's coming up. And, you know, so education is always going to be something that I'll focus on as well. But, you know, before we look at any issue, I think it's more important to even say, yeah, the issue doesn't matter. It's how you look at the issue. And if you're looking at it with constitutionally conservative principles, you're starting out and you're saying, okay, what's the you know, can the government actually even do what this law proposes, right? Is this an enumerated right in the Constitution, say if we're talking about the federal Constitution or the state Constitution for that matter? If it's not an enumerated right, okay, well then is it something that the federal Constitution leaves to the states or to the people, because that's what the 10th Amendment says? And then after you get through that, then you have to say, hey, you know, should the government be doing this? And the corollary to that is there an alternative, right? Is there something in the private market that can take place of this law? So I think that's what I really try to tell voters, that you learn a lot more about a candidate when they can tell you how they're going to process any issue, no matter what it is, you know, rather than just having them, you know, give you talking points on, you know, something that they read on the internet. So as a first-time candidate, it's difficult, you know, getting out there. And but you know what, we're doing it. We're already up to, I think, almost 300 likes on our Facebook page, which is great. Getting out there in social media, getting out there, you know, talking to the precinct committee people, and we really are running a grassroots campaign. And so that's the way I think we're going to win this primary.
Vicki, how would you respond to that?
Well, I just think it is a light at the end of the tunnel. I could not be more happy to know that there is a conservative family man who is principled and lives by those principles and is in the running. It's, we need more people like you. I wish there were more people out there who would understand. These elections are not about politicians. It's about family. It's about us. It's about we the people, not we the politicians. And I will never, ever say I'm a politician. I'm still an activist at heart, and I am a we the people to the end.
Welcome back, Grassroots Radio Colorado. This is Ken Clark and Senator Vicki Marble. We are your hosts tonight. If you'd like to join us, 303-477-5600. We have in studio with us John Kaiser, and he has decided to throw down in House District 25. He also has the extreme pleasure and honor of being one of my... God, that sounded so bad. He was one, all right, ladies and gentlemen, he was in leadership program of the Rockies. He was in the same class I was, okay? 2012. We were the best class ever. Take it to the bank. Richard Bratton is texting me right now. Yeah, sorry, Richard. We were a better class. he was the winner of the Defenders of Capitalism in his class. So, yeah, that was a tough act to follow. But anyway, tell us a little bit about your background, John. Tell us why you've decided to jump into this race.
Absolutely. So, Ken, I'm a second-generation Colorado native. I grew up on the Western Slope, small town. Originally was born in Salida, and then we moved when I was really young to the Durango area and wound up going to junior high and high school in Montrose. So, you know, grew up in the rural communities, in the mountain communities, and, you know, Colorado really is my home. And I was fortunate enough to be able to receive a nomination to attend our United States Air Force Academy down in Colorado Springs, and you know, while I was there, got to even have the honor of being on the Air Force's parachuting team. So I got to make, I don't know, about 650, 700 jumps as a professional skydiver and teaching other people how to skydive. So that was really neat. Got to travel around and be an ambassador for our Air Force Academy. But after that, you know, I got into intelligence, and I'm still an intelligence officer in the reserves. But I've served in Iraq and Afghanistan as a combat veteran, and you know, if elected, I'll be the, actually, believe it or not, the only ground combat veteran to be serving under the dome. So
really,
not too, you know, 500,000 veterans in the state, and yeah, no ground combat veteran. I was in Iraq and Afghanistan, so you know, I think that you learn a lot in military service. You learn a lot about leadership, and you know, but I think one of the things that I really take away from my military services, you know, the core values that they have, you know, integrity first, service before self, excellence in all you do. And you have to really kind of internalize that as our military really does. And, you know, I hope to run my campaign and, you know, using those same core values.
Well, I liked what you had said in the last segment about how you're going to be breaking down your decisions as to vote thumbs up or thumbs down on bills. You're going to break them down. Are they constitutional, both federally and state? And if they are not, great. Well, then that solves that problem. Then beyond that, is this something the government should be doing? Now, the left and the liberals will argue that you have to take care of these people. You have to do all these things. You blah, 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 blah. And there's nobody in the private sector to do it.
Well, what's really funny about that, since the government has been in charge of taking care of the poverty issue, we now have more people in poverty than we have ever had throughout our history, I think. So, yeah, every time the government gets involved.
You know, if they were in charge of the desert would run out of sand.
Yeah, I believe it.
There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that they would. And so, but based on that, everybody has their own way of looking at things. They have their own filter. I look at things a lot like Richard Bratton does when he does Principles of Liberty. You do too. I know Senator Marble does as well, because you look at things from that perspective. is this what the government should be doing? And in 99 times out of 100, the answer is no. Yet these guys keep coming at us with different, you know, all these stupid, whatever. Pick a subject, and the government's involved.
Well, Ken, you know, I think that, not to be an apologist for them, but, you know, in very few circumstances are there bills that have bad intentions. I mean, a lot of times these, you know, bills that the Democrats do run, they do help people. They do, you know, they help reach out to a underprivileged class or, you know, whatever they do. But that's kind of the big sticking point, is that you have to decide, well, is this a government function and can we pay for it? Or is that something that the government was never intended to do? And, you know, when we look at a lot of times, you know, charities, for example, you know, the left will say, well, you know, there's no charity that's meeting this need, so we need to, you know, extract this from the taxpayer and meet that need. But in fact, if the government would just stay out of the way, you know, that need would be filled. So, you know, it starts with, you know, personal responsibility too, and it starts with each of us being able to go out in our communities and find those who, you know, have a. Look, it's tough out there right now. It's tough in Jefferson County. It's tough in Montrose County. It's tough everywhere. So there's a lot of hurting people out there right now, and we need to, you know, all step up and, you know, and prove the Democrats wrong. You know, we can do that through our churches. We can do that, you know, through our own civic organizations, whatever it is. But, I certainly don't want the government running those types of things.
Well, absolutely right. So I need to ask Senator Marble a question. You know, you've just gone through your first year in the Assembly, and you fought a very heated primary battle. Then you ran your general election, and you're there now. So you're sitting here looking at a young punk like John. Sorry, but he's younger than both of us, so I can say that. But what would you ask him? What advice would you give to a kid like this?
I don't think there's much advice that I can give somebody who's on the right track. I mean, everything you're doing is just perfect. I think when I look at what the people want, and when I campaigned, you are filling the bill for all their needs and everything that I heard. And it's just a tremendous feeling to know that you're running and to know that you are honest, to know that when things are tough, you will be unflappable. You will always do the right thing. And that is who we need. We need good people to do these jobs, you know, and I cannot tell you how many people along the campaign trail that I ran into that I thought they should be running. This person should be running. Where have you been? You should be in, you know, involved in some level of politics. But to have you and to see what you're doing and to see your focus, there's nothing I have to say to you. You know, you're doing everything right. God bless you.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. This, you know, as you know, Senator Marble, this is not something that just puts itself together. It's a lot of hard work, and especially going gearing up for a primary. We're going to have to raise a lot of money. And, you know, so, you know, I'd encourage, you know, those who have the means and the ability and feel led, you know, please help us out and support our campaign. Go and check us out at facebook.com/KeyserForColorado. It's KEYSER. I tell people it's like Geyser, but with a K. And, you know, go check us out, johnkeyser.com, or follow us on Twitter, John, JON_Keyser. So, you know, it takes a lot of work, it takes a lot of resources, and, you know, and it's an uphill battle for sure, because there's a lot of forces that are wanting to, you know, make sure that government is able to continue doing business as usual. And, you know, so it's a fight, and we're in it.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that you had said in the opening of this segment, you talked a lot about your background. And for those of you that weren't listening then, we are speaking with John Keyser. He is candidate for House District 25. He is challenging Sherry Giroux, who is one of the best Democrats on the Republican ticket. I don't know how else to say it. She's at the bottom of the barrel on the principles of liberty, 5 points higher than the best Democrat. I mean, it's absolutely pathetic. And John, I am so excited that you are running against this Democrat, this progressive, this arrogant individual who votes. I don't get it. But you had mentioned that you have a very, very strong military background. You've got a background in military intelligence. That's interesting. I like that. And that you have a newborn. So you now have skin in the game.
I do.
Well, I want to talk about this tax increase. And Vicky and I have been planning on talking about that and hitting this thing pretty hard on today's show because the governor is launching his I don't know if you'd call it his issues campaign on the $1 billion a year tax increase on Thursday. Okay. And so he's going to, and I've got to figure this out. This is Colorado Commits to Kids, and Governor Hickenlooper will be now announcing the launch of their official campaign for the tax increase Thursday, 1 p.m. at the Green Mountain High School in Lakewood. Now, I have a question. Can they even do that? They're launching their kickoff for this tax increase at a high school.
I hope they're paying for the space. I hope they're paying dearly.
Well,
if they are.
I don't know whether or not that's legal. I have absolutely no idea. But it seems to me that, you know, they're having all this political event at a high school. By the way, this is in Jefferson County. Jefferson County is one of the counties that's going to be hit because they're going to be paying more taxes than they'll actually receive back. John, this is nuts.
Well, this is a huge issue in our campaign. And, you know, this whole concept that, hey, we're going to spend $1 billion and, you know, oh, it's going to be – it's for the kids. Well, you know, that's just not true. What's going to actually happen, and especially, you know, for my constituents in Jefferson County, you know, this is going to be a huge tax increase that's going to get levied on everybody in Colorado. But this money is not going to stay in Jefferson County. It's going to be a statewide tax, and the money's going to flow straight down the hill, and it's going to go right into Denver and right into the unions, and it's going to go directly to, you know, this is actually not even for the teachers. This is for the administrators, and this is for a broken retirement system that you know, they're trying to fund here now. So this is again, you guys were talking about it earlier. You know, bad laws have bad results. You know, going out and asking for this $1 billion tax increase, especially right now when it is really, really tough out there. You know, we still have 8% unemployment in the state. You know, I think President Obama and everybody on the Democratic side would like to say, hey, we're on a rebound and, you know, the economy's doing a lot better. But the fact of the matter is the facts don't support that. And it's not just the facts. You go out there and you talk to the voters. And, you know, I've had, you know, folks in my district that have said, hey, I really want to help you out. I have no money. I can't give you anything. Or here's $5. You know, does this help? Yeah, it's really difficult out there, and we certainly appreciate those supporters. But this is going to be a big, big issue.
What's your website?
It's JohnKeiser, JohnKeiser.com.
Welcome back, Grassroots Radio Colorado. This is Ken Clark. Senator Vicky Marble is in studio, and so is candidate for House District 25. Did I get that right, John?
That's right.
John Keiser. Now, John, Vicky and I are going to start lighting up this Initiative 22. I don't know what else to call it yet, because right now it is Initiative 22. That's going to change, and it's going to be called something else. But it stems from the school reform initiative. Before we dive into that, tell our listeners real fast about your background again. You're running against Sherry Giroux. She is the worst Democrat that has an R next to her name that we have in the state of Colorado. She was bottom of the barrel, 28 out of 28 in the Principles of Liberty rankings. So, you know what? I'm excited.
Well, we're excited too, and my background is in military intelligence. After I graduated from the academy, I went to Iraq and Afghanistan and a number of other places overseas, and still continue to wear the uniform proudly as a member of the active reserve. So still get to do that. But in my civilian job, I'm actually a lawyer. So well, I hope you don't hold that against me.
I'll try.
Senator Marble's laughing
for that
right now.
I'll try to forgive you.
I don't like lawyers except for my wife. She's a lawyer too, but she's the only one I like. No, but I'm a business lawyer, and I think that actually is going to help me also in the legislature because, you know, I think we need lawmakers down there that understand the impact that 14,000 pages of new regulations that you were talking about earlier, the impact that actually has on business in this state, the business environment. When CEOs are looking at relocating to a different area, I mean, they take a look at that kind of thing. They look at, hey, you know, what's it going to cost us to pick up and move there? What's our tax structure going to be like? And by the way, how much is it going to cost us to do business there and to comply with the laws that are already in place? So that's my background. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to this campaign. We're going to talk about issues. We're going to talk about the record. And, you know, we're going to work really hard to try to have some success here come primary time.
All right, very good. So let's dive into this thing. Now, Vicki, you're on the Educational Committee for the Senate, right?
That's correct.
So when this SB 213 came down, that came through your committee, right?
That's correct.
All right, I have got pages and pages and pages of notes on this thing, ladies and gentlemen. Let me just, you know what? I'm going to give you the floor. And you start where you feel you would like to, because our listeners need to know that this ballot initiative in the tax increase is being wrapped around this neat little package with a cute little bow on top that they call school reform.
And it has nothing to do with school reform. And that's what is such a killer, is they're selling it under this notion that our children are going to be better educated because of this, and they will not. This has nothing to do with the education your children will receive. And this is one of the things that was so interesting about what John had said in the prior segment. And when talking about this bill, most of it going for bureaucracy growth, 40% of this money is going to go to the city and county of Denver. And here's a little bit of trivia for all you listeners who are taxpayers. From 1992 to 2009, the student population grew 38%. Guess how much the administration grew in that time? Guess.
My guess is that it's an exponential number, but.
Oh, you got that. 83%. And the annual savings, if administrators and other non-teaching staff had increased at the same rate of students, $526 million.
You know what's really important about that is that that is unfair to teachers. You know, our teachers are trying to educate our kids to the best of their ability, and that money isn't going into the classrooms. It's getting stuck in a bureaucracy above them, and you know, so all these teachers have multiple bosses, multiple layers of administration above them that they have to deal with. It's not fair to our teachers. We want, and it's definitely not fair to our kids.
I agree. And one of the calls that we should be hollering from mountain peak to mountain peak is show us the reform. Show us that reform. Where is this backpack funding? How are our children going to really come out ahead on this? They aren't. Raise expectations, not taxes, is what Amy Oliver had said. And I believe that is one of the most important things we have to do. Hold these guys accountable. Don't let them get away with saying that this is going to benefit your child. This is not going to benefit your child. It is going to grow bureaucracy in Denver.
This whole initiative that started with SB 213 has four facets that I'm going to be concentrating on that are absolutely catastrophic. First and foremost, the bill itself. Now, the bill, from what I understand, if we do not pass the tax increase, what we're now calling Initiative 22, the whole thing falls apart.
That's
okay?
Right.
Dries up and goes away. Is that right, John?
That's my understanding of it. Yep. The condition was that the bill goes away if the voters don't actually get the initiative through. So I think the signatures were due on the 5th. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. They got 160,000. Yeah. It's on the ballot. Indeed. Count on it. And they needed 87 or 81,000. I can't remember the number, but they got 160. So, yeah, we're good to go. Here's the first and foremost thing that our listeners need to understand. This bill will centralize control. It will take control away from the school districts and set it up underneath the gold dome. All of the educational tax dollars, all the mill levies, all the property taxes will funnel into the gold dome then they are setting up a bureaucracy that will then dole out money, supposedly evenly, to all the rest of the school districts based on their need. So you lose complete and total control of your own school district. It will be centralized under the Gold Dome. So if you are a parent like you are, John, you are Vicky, I'm not. I'm the only lucky one here. You will not be able to go down and talk to your principal about even the curriculum, because if that principal and that school district does not want to teach Common Core as their curriculum, they will have no choice, because if they take that stand, they will get no money. So you will not have any control over the education of your own child.
Well, that's true. And there is no accountability metrics within this bill whatsoever. There's no specific metrics are offered to determine if the money is well spent. Rather, the bill calls for using methods of school funding analysis that are basically ask school officials how much they think they need and or ignore the lack of correlation between more money and better student results.
If you ask administrators how much they need, there's only one answer, and it's always more.
Oh, yeah. They won't give you a dollar amount.
No, it's more.
Ask the left how much money they need to run the government.
This bill feeds the growing administrative beast in Colorado, you know, for the public education system.
Here's what we've got so far. Denver is 16th in the nation as far as cities are concerned. The city of Denver is 16th in the nation. And this is only comparing cities to cities, major cities. We're 16th in the nation on spending. Our graduation rate is less than 50%.
Embarrassing.
46.3%.
Yeah, 46.3%. Now, Colorado Springs, the spending is less per year than it is in the city of Denver. Graduation rate, 74%. Okay? We spend in Denver $10,905 per student. Colorado Springs spends $9,011 per student. Mesa, Arizona spends $6,558. So that would bring them way below Denver, Colorado, as far as spending. Their graduation rate is 77%. So somebody tell me, and please explain to me, this lie that you are going to be hit with over and over and over again between now and November. Explain to me how spending more correlates into better education. It doesn't. It correlates into bigger, better, badder, worse, more obtrusive bureaucracy.
Since 1970, the spending has tripled across the nation for education. And yet, what do we have to show for it? We spend more money on education than any other country in the world, and we are ranked 30th in the world on our education system. That's abysmal. That is a horrible testament to how our taxpayer funds are being used or abused.
Oh, that's exactly right, John.
Yeah, and the thing that we need to think about, too, is that this is just really – not only is it unfair to the kids, but it's disingenuous for the ads that they're going to be running saying this is going to go directly to the classrooms and this is going to, you know, have this result for our kids. That's disingenuous. I mean, we already know that. But, you know, I really feel for the teachers here, too, because, you know, these teachers that are up in my district in Jefferson County, that, you know, they're working really hard to do the best that they can with what they've got. And, you know, we want to give them more tools. We want them equipped as they the best that they can possibly be to teach our kids. And we've got some great schools up there, but they can be better for sure. There's a number of organizations that are really pushing hard, and that's another thing we should talk about in Jeffco. We've got three school board seats that are open here in 2013. So we got just a couple of months left before we really decide what the Jefferson County School Board is going to look like. That's a big deal also.
There, and as I had mentioned, there were four distinct things about this whole scenario that drive me absolutely nuts. Now, we talked briefly about the first one, and that is that it takes away local control. If you think you have local control of your school district after this thing passed, you are sadly mistaken. It will be centralized control. You will have no more control. Second thing, and this is the biggest one, big one for me. This is the largest tax increase in Colorado history, ladies and gentlemen. It is the single largest tax increase in Colorado history. It is a 27% tax increase on people making over $75,000 a year. It is also, along with that, a progressive tax structure, meaning you have two tiers. Also means you have to amend the state of Colorado's constitution, because constitution in the state of Colorado says everybody's taxed at the same rate. That's fair. Not anymore. Not after this thing passes. Welcome back, Grassroots Radio Colorado. This is Ken Clark. Sitting in beside me is Senator Vicky Marble, and across the golden microphone, because it is, we've got this yellow little squishy thing on here, is John Kaiser. John is running for House District 25 against Sherry Giroux, assuming she decides to actually file. And there is no.
Oops. Oops.
Yeah, Vicky, that microphone's live, so that's what happens when you get live radio. But we've been talking about Senate Bill 213. I'm going to try to get everybody back on track here again. And Senate Bill 213 is the $1 billion-a-year tax increase that is coming our way. It is the School Reform Act that they claim actually has some reforms. And what I had talked about, there are four different pieces of this thing that absolutely drive me crazy. Number one, it removes local control from your school district and puts it all under the Gold Dome. So you will lose control of your kids' education. Number two, it is the largest tax increase in Colorado history, a 27% tax on $75,000 and above. Plus, it is a tiered tax structure. You know how the left always says, oh, we're going to tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. It also gives them carte blanche to raise tax whenever they want. They don't have to put it in front of the vote of the people again, because that's what Tabor says. Number three, they will use it to fund PARA. They are going to go and replenish, or try to replenish, the PARA funds, which is the Public Employees Retirement Association. And the fourth one is they're going to use this as a tactic to gut the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. Those are the four issues. We don't really have time left in this hour, well, in the rest of the show, to hit them all together. But those are the four main things that you need to pay attention to. Now, Vicky, during the break, you had come up with a couple things.
Oh, there are so many things. But one of the things that I really wanted to bring up are a couple of stats. From 2001 to 2011, Colorado's K-12 spending grew 15% faster than inflation. And the National Education Association estimates that Colorado had the median level of education expenditures per fall student enrollment in 2011 and 12. And that was number 26 in the nation. And that is according to the NEA rankings. But I wanted to point out also that the House sponsor of SB 213, which is Millie Hamner, acknowledged that only 3 to 4% of total allocated funds are designated under principal control to serve students at the school site they attend.
Okay, I need to stop you right there. You have got to say that again.
That 3 to 4% of total allocated funds are designated under principal control to serve students at the school site they attend.
And that was admitted by whom?
Millie Hamner, the House sponsor of SB 213.
So when they talk about school reform, okay, and John, I think you had made the comment that this really doesn't have anything to do with educating kids. We're talking a $1 billion tax increase, and 2 to 3% is actually going towards the children?
That's right.
How the hell is that going to make their education better?
Well, the fact of the matter is it's not. And, you know, Vincent Carroll had an article in the Post not too long ago, and he called it a $1 billion bet. And that's what it is. It's a it's a gamble that voters are going to have to take. They're going to have to say, you know, who are you going to trust? Are you going to trust the groups that are going to come out and they're going to parade all of the kids in front of the TV, and they're going to spend millions of dollars on this campaign in order to get it passed, because this is going to butter the bread.
Well, two, the decisions for the use of these funds require district-level approval, further restricting autonomy and innovation. Three-fourths of innovation fund awards must be given to education providers holding accreditation ratings associated with low academic performance. Priority is afforded to proposals that expand the length or number of school days, and grant awards will be based on recommendations by a new 15-member body, 11 of whom are appointed by the governor.
Wow. Oh, yeah, that's going to turn out well. What do you think, John? God.
Yeah, 15 more cars in the administrator parking lot and not another dollar going to the classrooms for the kids.
That's right. The legislation designates all students in grades 9 through 12 as full-time students for the purpose of funding internships, digital courses, and concurrent enrollment.
Well, and there was another point that was brought up. Our Constitution says that we need to educate kids six years old and above. But this thing breaks it down into kindergarten, full-time kindergarten, which is nothing more than daycare, that will be at the taxpayers' expense. And they're also working their way into preschool with this little jewel, aren't they?
They are. Our Constitution, our state Constitution, designates that we are mandated to fund education through children 6 to 20 or to 21 years old, not 3, 4, and 5-year-olds. We can't even afford to educate the kids 6 through 20, but we want to expand it, you know, into, you know, the why don't we just give our babies to the government just as soon as they're born?
Womb to the tomb.
That's right.
That's what they say.
Well, but that's what they're after. And this is absolutely amazing, because part of Common Core is trying to get a hold of the kids as soon as humanly possible in their life. And it's all about indoctrination, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, if you wonder why our college kids graduate from college and have – they're going, what is the Constitution? I don't – what is that thing? Didn't some old dead white guys write that? Oh, yeah. They were slave owners. That's right. Yeah, give me a break. Oh. Okay, let's dive into some more meat on this thing.
Okay, this program restricts students' learning options, because this legislation designates that students in grades 9 through 12 as full-time students for the purpose of funding internships, digital courses, and concurrent enrollment. Okay, think about this. Think about what about innovation? What about letting teachers and parents get together and find out what those kids need best?
Aunt, thank you for playing. Nope.
Not under this bill.
Yeah, you won't. I mean, that speaks volumes. It really does. What happened to the best schools that we have are the schools that have the most parents involved. And school choice, when you give a parent the option of where to send their child, and if you give them tax credits to send their child to that school that best fits their needs, don't you think our education system would return to sensical accountability, free market? Our children would once again return to being educated instead of indoctrinated, and their learning wouldn't be based on a test, how well they do on a test. They would actually learn volumes. And I just feel that the kids of today are being so cheated, and the parents of today are being ripped off by an education system that is failing everyone.
This is a local issue too, and we have to really keep that in mind, because yeah, this is a statewide vote, and the voters in Colorado are going to say, hey, are we going to give this blank check to the administrators? And but you know, when I talk to constituents in my House district, you know, they know that this is a shell game. They know that they're not going to get a return on the extra taxes that they're going to be paying. This is not something that's going to help make Jefferson County schools better. This is going to go straight down the hill. It's going to go right to Denver schools. It's going to go to other schools. And so, you know, I really hope that we can foot stomp this point enough that, you know, this is not a bill this is not a measure that's going to help our kids or our teachers.
Well, but you know what though, John, and Vicky, I got to take exception to both of you, because it is going to help our kids, because the better the bureaucrats do and the better their pension plan is, the happier they are going to be, and the more they're going to be smiling at the children and being able to educate better. Didn't you tell me that less than 2% of this is actually going into the students? And John, you had made the comment that it does.
3 to 4%.
What?
3 to 4%.
3 to 4%. And John, you had made the comment over and over again that this does absolutely nothing for the teachers, except it will backdoor an attempt to prop up para, and it will increase the size of the bureaucracy. Since when does bureaucracy educate anyone?
You know, one of the most incredible parts of this bill, too, that Ken and you and I had talked to about it on the way down here, is in this whole bill, out of the $1 billion that they're going to allocate for education reform, $6 million is set aside, $6 million, to incentivize better teachers and pay them more. $6 million. That's it?
Out of a billion.
Out of $1 billion? How much are you going to shortchange our teachers? It's about the teachers and it's about the kids, and they better start focusing on those two and the parents. And if we don't look at those three components and bring them together, we will never have an education system that is stellar in this world today. We will always be 30th and below, and we will always be raking over the coals, our taxpayers, asking them for another dime for administrative costs, not any that is going to go to benefit the good teachers and those kids and the parents who pay that bill. And this is a scheme. This is nothing more than a scheme for administrative costs and bureaucracy growth within the bad districts, and I am pointing to Denver.
I work with a gentleman whose wife is a school teacher, and she has a servant's heart. She does it because she loves the kids and doesn't do it for any other reason. But she actually decided that after this year she's going to hang it up and not going to be a teacher anymore because she can't stand the fact that she's got so many bosses and so much bureaucracy over her head interfering with her ability to connect one-on-one with those kids and give them the best education that she possibly can. So this is a super motivated, caring, wonderful woman that's pouring her heart out in this classroom trying to, you know, make her kids excel and do the very best that she can. And she's throwing her hands up and she's saying, look, this is just – I'm getting crushed by the administration, and this bill does what? Piles on more.
Absolutely. John, I want to thank you for throwing your hat in the ring and running in House District 25 against Sherry Giroux. God, that woman needs to be retired. If there was ever a Democrat that carries a Republican card, that is the one that needs to be retired. She is number 28 out of 28. You are a graduate of Principles of Liberty. You've got a strong foundation. You're going to have a tough time knocking off old Justin Everett, I got to tell you, in the House, because he's pretty rock solid. And John, real quick, give out your contact information one more time.
Well, thanks again for having me on. I really do appreciate it. And check us out at facebook.com/Kaiser4Colorado, K-E-Y-S-E-R for Colorado. And also follow us on Twitter, John, J-O-N underscore Kaiser, or get on our website, johnkaiser.com.
Randy Corcoran will be in for Jason tomorrow. Until then, as always, good night, Colorado.